Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
The U.S. moves warships to protect Israel against a possible Iranian attack. And U.S. stocks retreated despite strong big bank earnings.
The economy is strong, but banks are feeling a little bit more profit pressure. But overall, the picture is still pretty good for them.
Plus, how Turkey's annual inflation rate topped 68% last month. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. We report exclusively that the U.S. has rushed warships into position to protect Israel and American forces in the region in the event of a direct attack from Iran that could come as soon as today or Saturday. U.S. officials said two destroyers, one already in the region and another that was redirected there, have been repositioned. They said at least one carried a missile defense system. Iran has threatened to retaliate for an attack last week in Damascus, Syria, which Tehran said was an Israeli airstrike. Several top Iranian military officials were killed. In Washington, the House has passed legislation to renew a controversial national security spying power after overcoming objections from Republicans, including former President Donald Trump. In a compromise to placate the opposition, the revised bill would renew Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act for just 2 years instead of the five previously sought by House Speaker Mike Johnson. The bill now goes to the Senate. Senior Biden administration officials say Section 702 is the most important surveillance tool at their disposal and generates intelligence that's used to thwart terror plots, fend off hackers, and track spies. Critics have raised concerns with how it allows the collection of some American communications without a warrant. The largest U.S. banks have begun to report their earnings. J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup all posted better-than-expected first-quarter profits and revenue today. But they warned that their core lending incomes would be muted this year, as higher interest rates force them to pay up for deposits, a pressure that no longer seems likely to ease soon. I asked reporter Alexander Saidi to explain the picture we're getting so far.
The economy is strong. People are spending money. People have confidence in the economy. And that's companies and consumers. And that's overall beneficial to banks. However, if interest rates remain higher for longer, which increasingly seems like will be the case, banks' profit margins are going to be squeezed because they have to pay higher interest rates to their depositors, or else they risk losing them to money market funds or competitive banks that will offer higher interest rates than maybe the big banks are accustomed to offering. So all three of the banks that we reported on today, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citi, either said they expected to earn less net income from interest in 2024 or that it would stay roughly flat. And that is reflective of the rate environment.
U.S. stocks fell, with all three major indexes trading off more than 1%. The Dow lost nearly 500 points. U.S. drug shortages are at an all-time high. A total of 323 drugs were in short supply in the first quarter of the year, including the diabetes drug Ozempic, life-saving allergy treatment epinephrine, child-friendly forms of the antibiotic amoxicillin, and chemotherapy medications. That's according to data from the University of Utah Drug Information Service, which tracks shortages, and that was published by the American Society of Health System Pharmacists. Supply shortages have been a worsening problem in the past few years. While some are due to demand, health economists have also pointed to a broken pharmaceutical supply chain that makes it difficult for generic drug makers to make a profit and stay in business. And as expected, U.S. Steel shareholders have voted to approve sale of the company to Japan's Nippon Steel, despite opposition from the United Steelworkers Union and members of Congress. But this isn't the final word. The $14.1 billion deal still faces ongoing regulatory reviews. President Biden has said he's opposed to foreign ownership of the company, but hasn't explicitly said he would block the deal. Coming up, we take a look at how a rush for housing in Turkey has helped drive up inflation in the country. More after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
In a special series this month, we're taking a look at extreme inflation around the world, how different countries and their people are grappling with it. Today, we're focusing on Turkey. Inflation there hit 68.5% in March, compared with March last year, and that's down from its peak. What's News producer Anthony Bansi looked into what it's like for the people living there and how the country's unconventional approach to tackling inflation has gone.
Turkey's extreme inflation problem is no joke, but that's not stopping comedians from using it in their stand-up routines. Like at Tuz Bebir, a comedy club in Istanbul, where Ayşegül Bektaş Frame did a bit earlier this year about her American husband.
My husband is a American, and he gained so much value last 1 year. He was worth of 1 lira one night, and next morning he woke up, he was worth of 5 lira. He just looks more hotter than ever before. I said, darling, you gained like 15 times more value since we got married 12 years. And he said, no, Ayşegül, you lost 15 times of value.
Back in January, when Ayşegül did this bit, the exchange rate for the lira to the US dollar was 30 to 1. Now, it's around 32 to 1. So, Ayşegül's husband has gotten even more expensive compared to her lira. So, how did inflation in Turkey get so high? Our Middle East correspondent, Jared Malson, says it began when pandemic restrictions began easing.
When countries started reopening and economies started revving up again, that heats up the economy, which contributes to inflation. People are going out, they're spending more money. Businesses are selling more things. People are traveling more. There was also the rising cost of energy, for example, resulting from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. All of those things contribute to rising prices.
If that sounds familiar, it's because those same pressures lifting prices in Turkey were at work across the world, too. In response, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, and the U.S. Federal Reserve started raising their interest rates to cool off their economies. But Turkey's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, started cutting rates until they reached 8.5% last February. Erdogan's push in the opposite direction of these huge central banks was rooted in a personal conviction that high interest rates are bad.
Erdogan has a kind of old-school religious view of interest rates and a very unorthodox take on economics. And for most of his time in power, over the last 20 years, the bureaucrats in the government have been able to talk him out of this. And as his power has grown, he eventually got his way with the central bank and cut interest rates in 2021 in spite of the rising inflation right at the time when inflationary pressures were at their greatest.
And with people willing to spend, Brad Setzer, an economist and senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, says the lower interest rates stoked spending further.
When interest rates are well below inflation, everybody in the economy wants to go out and borrow and buy now. And why hold your savings in a Turkish bank at a low interest rate when those savings will be eroded by inflation? Why not go out and buy a new car? Why not take a loan to buy a new car?
And that's exactly what people did. All of that extra demand led to higher prices for everyday things like food, housing, and medicine. And those higher prices ate into people's income, making it hard for Turkish people to save money. So, to hedge against inflation, locals have looked for different ways to hold onto the value of their money. They've traded in their lira for stronger currencies like the dollar and euros, poured it into commodities like gold, and bought assets like jewelry and property. Here's Jared again.
There's a huge rush to buy real estate. There have been a lot of factors contributing to that. One is people looking for places to put their money that isn't cash. Another is the arrival of hundreds of thousands of people from Russia leaving during the war, as well as Ukrainians. You also had more than 3 million people who were displaced by the earthquake last year in southern Turkey.
This confluence of people moving through Turkey created a surge of demand for places to stay. And that's led to a rush in rentals too, which, as you might have guessed, has led to higher rents. According to Turkey's Başakşehir University's Center for Economic and Social Research, rental prices across Turkey rose 87% in January from a year earlier. In December, Turkey's central bank governor at the time, Hafize Gaye Erkan, told the Turkish newspaper Hürriyet that the rent was extraordinarily expensive. She compared rental prices in Istanbul to Manhattan's, and she even said she had to move in with her parents. And if a central bank governor is having a hard time with rental costs, what about someone like Murat Ginçoglu? The 34-year-old lives with his fiancé in Istanbul, where he's a comedian who does open mics at Tuzbebir, the comedy club where we heard from Ayşegül.
Rents are getting crazy expensive here. I don't know what's about it, but it's getting expensive more than everything else.
Murat says if he was to look for apartments in his neighborhood in Istanbul now, any place nearby would be even pricier.
Living with both of us working, we don't want to pay like 60% of our combined income to rent. That's crazy.
Turkey has moved to address the rent issue. Last summer, it extended a law that protects tenants from inordinate rent increases by capping them at 25%. But Jared says that's created some new problems.
It's basically just created a lot of tension where landlords are trying to evict tenants. Tenants are fighting back, hiring lawyers, going to the courts. And there's just a lot of legal struggles around this. Basically, everyone you talk to has a story about this.
Turkey's also made some even bigger moves to address its extreme inflation. Last June, Erdogan pivoted on interest rates, hiring new economic leaders who started raising rates in line with most of the other world governments. In March, the central bank raised rates for the ninth time since last June, bringing them up to 50%. Turkey's annual inflation rate in February was 67%. That's up from January, but down from its high of more than 85% in 2022. So, what comes next for Turkey? Here's Jared again.
That's the big question right now, is this approach going to work in the long term? And what a lot of us economists will say is they want a much more aggressive approach to raise the interest rate above the inflation rate, really tackle inflation, bring it down, which would be painful for everyone, but they say it's the necessary medicine.
In the meantime, Murat says prices rising so quickly month to month has had some benefits. Sort of.
I'm getting married soon. One way what we did is that we booked a wedding place last year. So now it feels cheaper. We have to pay like 60% of the price. And we booked it like in December. So it feels like, we are getting a cheap marriage.
Extreme World Inflation from A to Z is hosted and produced by Anthony Bansi. Next Friday, we'll wrap up our series in Zimbabwe, which recently launched a new gold-backed currency. And that's what's news for this week. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi. What's News is hosted by me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. Additional support this week from Tali Arbell. Michael Laval wrote our theme music. Our supervising producers are Sandra Kilhoff and Michael Kosmides. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley are our deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. Tomorrow, you can look out for our weekly markets wrap-up, What's News in Markets. Then on Sunday, we'll be answering your questions about the current state of the U.S. labor market in What's News Sunday. We'll be back with our regular show on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.